Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's November 22nd, 2013. You're listening to the best, longest-running PokerCast there is. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
So you're home? You're back in town?
Yeah, I'm doing my whole East Coast, West Coast rapper feud in myself, you know. Part of my body wants to be on the West Coast, the other party wants to be on the East Coast, and we'll just see how it works out.
You keep wanting pineapple on your pizza, and you don't know why.
That is absolutely a brilliant comment, because the wife just cut a bunch of pineapple for me today.
So. Awesome.
She didn't leave a pizza for me, though, so I just got to eat it, you know, old school raw, I guess. But but back from the Ante Up NorCal Classic, just a quick recap. After we talked last week, we had a couple more events, and then the main event. And so we came back on Monday to do the final table, which is tradition at Thunder Valley Casino Resort. Our absolutely fantastic host for this event. And they like to live stream the final table and main event. They also live stream one of the earlier events, too. So they're starting to do a little bit more with their bigger events. And they have their own, they do everything in-house, which is pretty cool. And they have their own setup. It's really neat. They have one of those little tinier tables, so it makes it easier for the broadcast, right?
And
cramming 47 people at that final table. So technically, the final table for the live stream final table, I guess, is what you call it, had seven players, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there were more than 2 million chips in play, I want to say, at the final table.
Yeah.
With the blinds at 10,000, 20,000.
Wow.
Deep stack poker, right?
Yeah.
This final table, seven players, took less than 2 hours to complete.
Holy cow.
I have never seen anything like this in my life.
Sounds like Coolerville.
Yeah, you would think that's the case, but there really was only like one that was kind of a cooler, and that was I guess it was a cooler, it was just mind boggling that people with these deep stacks. I mean, if we all went in there and everybody had like 10 big blinds, you know, if it's just that deep at the tournament, then yeah, sure, 2 hours. We'd be talking about how remarkable it was that it lasted 2 hours.
Yeah.
At that point, but here I really thought, oh my gosh, my flight, I gotta leave for 2 a.m. to drive to San Francisco for my flight. I might be pushing it when this thing started at 4 o'clock. At 7 o'clock, I'm off away from the resort having dinner with the poker manager talking about the event. It's just shocking. I talked to the winner, Daniel Evans, by the way, is our winner of the Ante Up NorCal Classic this year. Really cool guy. I talked to him and the runner-up after the event, and they said they thought that because it was such a grind on day two, and they said they thought that getting down from 13 players to 10 took at least 3 hours.
Man.
A whole hour more than it took to eliminate the final seven players. He said that since it's such a grind, he thinks that people just came back the next day and said, you know what, we're going to gamble, we're going to move and get this thing over with. And gosh golly, they did. So the one cooler that you mentioned, the chip leader going into the final table, Brennan, had 1.4 million. So he had, you know, probably half the chips at the table at that point.
Yeah.
The guy that Daniel ended up winning was like the next with 1 million. So Brandon took out three of the players at the final table, and then was the next person to go out. He tangled with Daniel, who was the trip leader at that point. They got it in ace queen versus ace king, and Daniel spiked the queen to knock him out. But it seemed like just too big a stacks to get it in at that point. And can you imagine the chip leader, the two chip leaders tangling at the end? And then of course that leaves Daniel with a massive chip lead over the gentleman that he eventually dispatched. But
yeah,
crazy how that all worked out.
Wow.
I mean, I couldn't keep up texting you. I was like, hey, we lost one. We lost another one. My little texting was still doing the little pinwheel thing before I could, oh, hey, another one gone.
Yeah, I could see this happening if it was a flat payout structure, but it wasn't, right? The top three were the big money, right?
Yeah, I think seventh got 10,000, I think, in this, and first was 60,000. So, you know, quite a bit of disparity there.
Yeah.
And there weren't any chops or anything like that, so it wasn't like they, you know, people were had nothing to play for at this point. I mean, they were playing for that money that was listed there, and everything else that went. But really funny. I mean, I talked to a bunch of the poker room staff that kept coming on. They're like, we lost another one. I mean, I got up at one point to go to the bathroom in number one, not even number two, and came back, and I'm like, did we lose somebody? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, you got to be kidding. I was gone for 3 seconds.
You know what? I've been with you in public, and no matter what number one or number two you do, you're never gone for just 3 seconds. Just so everybody knows.
I'm a very hygienic person. I have to wash and use the Dyson Airblade to make sure that I'm not spreading any disease. So.
You know, by the way, quickly, Mythbusters said that spreads the most disease possible.
Yes, I know you keep telling me that.
Just remember that.
It's still so much fun to dry my hands with it, though.
You keep saying it, and I keep reminding you, but you keep saying it. You're making people sick, but that's all right. Which is weird, because you're a host, that's why. You know, you don't get sick, you just carry the disease.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. I just make sure that everybody else is contributing to the Obamacare failure.
Right, I finally figured that out, so.
But yeah, an absolutely great time, but I look forward to the coverage in our January issue, and love Thunder Valley Resort. We'll be back out there twice next year. I think we already mentioned that our Antioch World Championship will be at the beginning of August next year, and then we'll be back for the NorCal Classic, which will go back to its original dates, it sounds like, of kicking off on Thanksgiving weekend instead of finishing beforehand. And based on the feedback from players this year, I think the resort's going to make a couple changes for the NorCal next year in addition to the changing of the schedule. But right now all the focus is on the World Championship, and we should have all that information locked up by April 1st is our goal right now. But what I can say right now is Ben Irwin, the director of poker there, is very committed to making this the best value $1,650 buy-in tournament ever. Cool. Talking like massive chip stacks, not skipping any levels, and giving people a lot of play, and making this even maybe a four or five day event. So
he's also consulting with some pros, trying to get some pros up there. That kind
yeah,
of thing,
absolutely.
So.
I think you know, once he gets everything done, he's going to reach out to the folks that he knows. Obviously, we'll reach out to the folks we know and get some feedback. And if we need to tweak it to make it a little bit better, we will. But he really wants this to be a special event next year, and we're certainly appreciative of that. And you know, and the real difficult things about this, and we spent a lot of time talking this week out there, is that in all those things we just mentioned, you know, 50,000 starting units, you know, 40-minute levels to go to 60, or 60-minute levels to go to 90, whatever you want to do with it, not skipping the levels, all that's great for some players. But then you have other players that don't want to play for 4 days or 12 hours every day for 4 days.
Mm.
And so, you know, ultimately it comes down to you can't make everybody happy. And that's the big challenge, I think, in any of these kind of events is, you know, doing the best you can for as many people as possible.
Yeah, you got to find that perfect mix. You know, some of the tours seem to have it. You know, there are other intangibles, too. Like, do you want to be on the cover of a magazine? Do you want to be on TV? Do you want your anonymity? Do you know what I mean? It just depends right. on all kinds of factors. So hopefully we'll hit the sweet spot with the World Championship and make it really, really successful. Looking forward to that.
And then I was out there quite a while, obviously, and on the days that we didn't have tournaments going on, or at least tournaments I wasn't playing in, I tried to pop around and see some other places. Made it back to Reno like I always do. Nothing really huge new to report from there, but stay tuned. We're hoping to have an excellent anti-up announcement at Reno shortly. But I was able to hit a couple newer casinos, which is always odd for me because I think I've been everywhere.
You're right.
But one brand new opened north of San Francisco. If you live in the Bay Area out there, there's no way you don't know it because everybody I talked to out there says they just plastered the airwaves with advertisements that say 45 minutes from bay to play.
Yeah.
It's a 45-minute drive north of San Francisco. It's the Graton Resort just opened. And I was told the very first day, it opened like literally a week before I got there, that people were parking on the freeway, Chris.
Oh, no.
Getting out of the car and walking the last mile or two to get in there.
Oh,
and didn't care whether they're cops are just walking by in big wide swaths of tickets, leaving it for them. They couldn't even tow the cars quick enough. Absolutely phenomenal.
That's crazy.
And I really don't, I mean, you know, that's awesome for them, for the resort, but I really don't get the mindset of these people that it's not like it's a limited time showing.
Yeah, exactly.
Get in there and play this week, and then we're closing it down next week. I just don't get it. And certainly from a poker standpoint, they have an 18-table room, and it was, you know, full spread when I was there with wait lists that were like miles long. So a lot of poker action, obviously. But from a poker player, I told a lot of people this because everybody asked me about it because I told them I stopped in and they see it and they were curious about it. As a poker player, I really prefer kind of the casinos that aren't as busy.
Yeah.
You know, I just I like to go and play kind of quietly. And there, when you have so many people and you got traffic cops trying to get you into the parking garage and find the spot, and you know, just wall-to-wall people in there, it's too stressful for me as a poker player. As these other games, it's a little bit different. But
were you always like that, though, or was that after years of playing in Florida rooms where there really isn't any casino unless you're playing at the Hard Rock?
Yeah, I think I talked about this before. I've always get annoyed in the casino environment with the slot machines banging and stuff, but I mean, it's just a personal preference. I mean, other people like that action and stuff, but I just like the rooms where I know I can pull up, pop in, get in the poker room, and get the heck out. Now, of course, the casino doesn't like me for doing that. They like me to meander through their restaurants and shops and table games and slots to get to the poker room and play. But that's just me. I mean, other people are like that. But this resort, I'm pretty sure is going to be slammed for quite a while. So if you're planning on going up there, go there in the morning when it's a little less crowded, from what I can tell from the Bravo Poker app. But at night, and particularly on weekends, it's going to be a madhouse. But they're definitely changing things in the Bay Area.
I can't believe people would risk like getting towed or tickets just to go play when they could just wait a week and go play again, and it's going to be, you know, whatever. I mean, when Foxwoods first opened, we drove like an hour to get there, and when we got there, we saw it was backed up like way, way, way back. We turned around and went home.
Yeah.
We literally drove an hour and still said, this isn't right, let's just go home.
It's not worth it, right?
Yeah. So I just don't get it, but whatever. People just desperate to see a new facility, I guess.
Well, yeah, and there's not a lot of casinos in the Bay Area. There's a lot of card rooms
that's true.
That can deal with some, you know, what they call the California games. But in terms of slot machines, it's certainly the closest one anywhere to the Bay Area right now. So I can see that attraction. But yeah, crazy busy. And then with the two other ones that have been established, but I just haven't visited them before, Jackson Rancheria, which is about 45 minutes southeast of Sacramento and the wine country on that side of the state. Really pretty drive down there, and a phenomenal looking resort. I didn't know what to expect when I got down there, but just totally renovated and looks really good. Poker Room has 6 tables, but they can add 3 for bigger tournaments. They're doing a lot of stuff with Lips, the ladies' tournaments out there. And they obviously just gave away a cruise package for us for the Annie Up Cruise, and we'll probably try to talk to them about doing more of that. So that's definitely worth a little drive down there if you're in the Sacramento area. And then on the way back, I hit Red Hawk, which has all these billboards up that it's won all these awards as best casino in Northern California. That may be the case. The Poker Room is very small and it actually shares a pit area. So the poker is getting established, but they're also talking to us about doing some Andy Up Cruise giveaways too. So as soon as we get that information, we'll let people know.
Very cool.
So, you know, news was going on while I was out there, Chris.
And always
happens. Trying to keep up with it.
Always happens.
Can't get all of it in here today because we don't have the Andy Up News Desk anymore. We had to, you know, sell it on eBay. But one thing I did want to mention is Congressman Jim McDermott has introduced a companion to other online poker bills that are working their way through Congress, or I should say in Congress. I don't think they're really working their way anywhere quite yet. We hope so. But what it would do is it would establish a 12% deposit tax, which will be paid by the operators, not the players. And 1/3 of it will go to the federal government, and 2/3 of it will go to the state or tribal state where the deposit was made. So this is a way for the federal government to get a little money for kind of overseeing an online poker apparatus. but the lion's share of it will go to the states or the Indian tribes. And what's kind of cool of it, in my opinion, is that it's rewarding. It's a great hybrid between the states' rights and federal government kind of thing that kind of trips up a lot of legislation. So the federal government gets its cut no matter what, but most of it's going to stay within the states that actually have the players that are bringing in and contributing it. So, you know, if you're like a state like California, you're going to get a crap ton of money out of this.
Yeah.
And you're not sharing all that money with, you know, tiny states like Delaware or places like that. Apparently it's modeled after a bill in the United Kingdom, but I haven't read too much about it, but on the surface it sounds like it makes a lot of sense to me.
Well, the question I ask for you, because you know a lot of this kind of stuff, is when they say a companion to other bills, does that mean that it automatically has to be attached to other bills? Do bills have to say, hey, I really like Jim's idea, let's tag that on to our... Or, I mean, do they pass that individually and then force all the other bills that go through to use this system? How does that work?
Well, it works a lot of different ways. I imagine what would eventually happen is that this would get attached to one of the other bills. You know, it's a way of, I mean, right now people are like, oh, you know, all right, I get the whole online regulation we need to do, but how's the money going to work? Well, now this is a bill that says, here's how the money could work. And okay. Then eventually, I think when it gets moving or it gets moving to the floor, this stuff is going to be, you know, either combined together or they're going to be passed in a single vote. So you have, you know, both bills passed, but they're working with each other. But it doesn't have to be. I mean, one could be passed without the other. I can't imagine that they would pass a taxing bill without having the regulating bill first. So, but that would be interesting if they did.
What's odd about it a little bit to me is that the government will tax the money that we're putting in. They'll do it through the operator, but they'll tax our money going in, and then they'll tax our money coming out. You know,
well,
I mean?
they would tax the players technically when the money comes out, depending
right.
on how your tax bracket is set up. I mean, if you don't make enough to, I guess technically you got to, you know, claim anything, but you know, you can also, you know, deduct your losses and things like that. So, but I mean, it's income; it doesn't matter. I mean, it's income one way or the other. But the tax going in is really for the regulatory part of it. The tax, you know, your income tax actually
right.
funds, you know, all the other stuff that income tax normally funds. So it's a different kind of thing. I mean, it's not very different from a lot of things where there's, you know, a user fee or something on the front end, but, it just happens because it's, you know, gambling that there's a potential for you to win money and then obviously have to pay taxes on that. But,
in your reading...
Crazy.
In your readings of the bill, and have you seen people's reaction to this one?
Actually, I haven't. I saw the story when it first posted, and I haven't seen anybody really talking about it since then. I mean, obviously, I imagine, I know there's a lot of listeners out there like, hey, too many taxes, I don't know. And that's true, but let's be honest, the only way an online poker bill is going to get passed on the federal level is if there's revenue generated by it for... Governments.
Right, governments.
Otherwise, you know, they're just there's no reason to on their sense because it's, you know, it's such a controversial issue anyhow. The only way you're going to pass it is proving that, you know, it's going to make a lot of money for the government. So we're just going to have to, as players, understand that that's the price we pay to get, you know, regulated poker back in this country.
Right, and we're not paying. I mean, we're not really paying it. They're, you know, it's coming out of the profits of the operators anyway.
Yeah, I mean,
we
I
make
guess,
our deposit. Our full deposit still goes in.
Right. I mean, you know, second level thinking. You know, the more obviously the operators are taxed, the more the raker is probably going to be, or something like that. So, I mean, I wouldn't make a blanket statement that players are not paying this. They'll be paying it in some form. Probably not at the 12% level that the operators are, but you know, it's a cost of doing business, and you know, some operators will pass it on more than others, and you know, that's what's great about the free market economy.
Sure. I would imagine that if PokerStars, instead of what they went through, said, oh, all I have to do is give you 12% of what we make, and we don't have to go through all the crap we went through, and we can stay in the country the way we were, they would have done it about a billion times. So,
oh, yeah, easily. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
so
that's just,
it's not that big
of
a deal for them.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I don't want to put the cat out of the bag here, but we're working on a mobile app for Annie Up, and you know, we had to pay $25 to Google to be listed in the Android store.
Right.
You know, $25 is nothing compared to, you know, the benefit of having it, but it's $25, you know. Yeah. So the same thing with this. You know, the 12% might sound daunting, but you're right. If there's a lot of scale involved, and, you know, 12% is nothing.
Yeah. And like you said, it's the price of doing business. You need to, you have to pay your taxes, so, you know, to, in this country. So might as well just do it right up front and be able to give us the best product possible. So pretty cool.
And then one shameless plug before we move on to our listener spotlight. The Antiup Cruise promotions are heating up. We got the cruise coming up March 30th out of Los Angeles next year on the West Coast. Trying to get a lot of interest in that, and it seems to be working. Pearl River Resort in Mississippi, Rounders Poker Club in Southern California, and Wendover Nugget near Salt Lake City are giving away cruises for that sailing. Running Aces will be giving away cruises for our Galveston sailing coming up, and we have a number of other properties that are looking to do giveaways for the LA cruises and other ones on our schedule. So go to visit antiefcruises.com for all the details on those giveaways and more as we announce them.
Galveston, Texas. That's near what, Houston?
Houston, yes.
Yeah, that's cool. Very cool. All right, we have a listener spotlight this week. You know, every time we use one, or if you call the hotline at 813-448-1120, you also can email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if you haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do a call to Floor in Hand of the Week, we'll give you something really cool. This week's sponsor is TournamentButton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo and ask about the Antiup logo version and use code Antiup for free shipping. This comes from, what do you think, it's Kazin or Kazin?
Kazin sounds better.
All right, come from Kazin. He says, after playing once a month at our home game here in San Diego, I've stepped it up and have been playing inexpensive daily tournaments. I've cashed 5 out of 8, and my wife has cashed a perfect 3 for 3. We plan to continue playing these tournaments, but I know it will be very difficult, if not impossible, to maintain this good of a win rate. But I've yet to walk away from a cash game with any chips. I certainly have a lot to learn there, and I was wondering if you could recommend any cash game books that could help snap me out of the funk and see the game more clearly.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like you and I have a ton of help for him here. I mean, it's I don't play a lot of no-limit cash games, so I haven't really looked into books to help me with it, which I guess is kind of weird because that's probably what I should do, right? Yeah. I want to do well with it. But I was looking on my bookshelf here, and I haven't read it, so I can't personally recommend it, but it comes from the DMAT Enterprises, which does a lot of good books that I have read and enjoyed. But it's called Small Stakes, No Limit Hold'em. It's by Ed Miller, Suni Mehta, and Matt Flynn. Not the Matt Flynn that's going to save my Packers season out. But you might want to pick that up. Again, like I said, I haven't read it myself, but this publisher publishes a lot of good books. And the fact that it's small stakes is where we're going to start. Because that's a big consideration, I think, in book titles. Is there's so many out there that if you just get a general no-limit hold'em, it may not... it may give you general advice, obviously, the more general the title is. And obviously, I think our listener spotlight guy, Kazin, is not jumping into the 2-5 or 5-10 no-limit games here, right?
Probably 1-2 no-limit or something. I'm assuming it's no-limit. There are other books. I mean, I could have sworn, wasn't there there's like a small stakes limit hold'em thing by I don't know, with the 2+2 guys. I thought I could have sworn that there was a... Didn't I read that book, or wasn't that your book? And
there's a great one. The one I always recommend is Winning Low Limit Hold'em by Lee Jones. That one is a must read for everyone. It is limit hold'em,
right?
But it has some good theory in there. But and I think some of it translates to no limit pretty well. But if I had to pick one book, I would probably pick one that was focused a little bit more on no limits. So,
well, the other thing I want to add to, and I think I've said this in the past, you got to remember when the original Super System was written, it was like 79, something like that, 78, somewhere around there. Tournaments weren't a big deal then. You know, they had the World Series, but that was really about it. So obviously, to me, that book is written about cash games. I mean, he talks about how to play hands in situations, and yeah, there are some theories that you'll talk about, you know, that how cash games differ from tournaments, and, you know, you can always go back into your pocket to keep playing a cash game, blah, blah, blah. But really, just whatever he talks about, Doyle Brunson, and Super System for No Limit Hold'em, will translate to your cash game.
True.
And that book really is just the best book out. I've always thought that was just the best book out. You know, as far as if you're really starting out in cash games and not doing well and whatever. So I would clearly pick up that book somewhere and give it a good read, and that will translate to your cash games. So that's the only book I would recommend.
I would say the only problem with that is obviously our hero here is doing very well at tournaments. And we get a ton of questions here. And even when I'm traveling, from people would say, I do great at tournaments, but I suck at cash games. What can I do? And I think you do need to learn those differences, and we don't need to go into that now because we've answered that quite a bit. But one of the problems, I think, is if you pick up a book that's geared towards tournaments, you're going to learn a lot. It's going to help you with the cash games, but it's not going to help you make that transition to the differences, you know, the fact that, you know, people are going to, they can reach into their wallet and reload at a cash game. So, you know, bluffs are going to work a little less likely, that kind of stuff. That you need to transition to cash.
Transition, that's the thing. I don't know if there are any books that are talk about transition. Like, Super System is a cash game book. There's no doubt about it. They're not talking about five-card draw tournaments in there.
Right, it's true.
So it's clearly a cash game book, but there's no transitional book I know of that says, hey, you're doing well in tournaments, but you suck at cash games? Here's what you need to do. I don't think that's even out there.
Yeah, that would be actually a good book. I'm sure someone's written it. Someone who's not familiar with it. But if not, that would be the book to read or to write.
Sounds like it's a chapter to me. It sounds like it would be too much to fill a book in that. But, I mean, even so,
it's almost like a top 10 list. Maybe Dave Letterman and Paul Schaefer to do it.
Yeah, here are the 10 rules for transitioning to cash games from...
He's clearly a smart player. If you just give them a couple tips, I think they can extrapolate that out and figure it out. I mean, you know, if you're really successful at tournaments or cash games and you're trying to transition to the other one, you just need a couple tips, and I think the light bulbs go off on why it's different.
The other thing, too, is I think people are a lot more brazen when it comes to tournaments. They're not too worried because they know, hey, I'm just going to lose $40 or $60 today if I make a mistake.
But
a cash game, you can't buy, you know, most of them you have to buy in for $100 or $200 or whatever it is, and then it's like they get nervous. So ask yourself that question. Are you nervous to make the moves that you need to make because it's money, you know? So, but yeah, I don't know of any books that tell you about the transition, at least. I know there are some books about cash games, but most books are cash games if you think about it. As long as they don't have tournament in the title, you could probably use that information, so...
All right, time for Call the Floor. If you find yourself in a situation in your favorite poker room or home game and not sure what the proper ruling should have been, email us at podcast@antiettmagazine.com, and we'll have our veteran poker room manager, Jody Russell, tell you how he would have ruled. And like I say, I got to spend the night with Jody at his house up in Reno this bass trip. It was really good to see him again. And he's really enjoying doing these Call the Floor, so keep them coming, folks.
Yeah, cool. Very good.
This one comes from Dave Miller, and he says, we're in a 1-2 game at a Pennsylvania casino, and the hand plays out to the river. The dealer spreads the stub, places the cut card on top as usual. Players check, showdown, and the pot is shoved to the winner. The dealer drops the rake into the rake drop slot. Now we notice that the card on top of the spread stub is not the cut card, but a card from the deck that's in the shuffler. And the shuffler has a green light. Floor man comes over and rules that it's a missed deal. The winner decides not to argue since there's only a $22 pot. The hand is deconstructed, so the players get their money back, except one player is short of $3 because of the $2 rake and the $1 bad beat drop. Floorman says he'll be back in a minute with some paperwork, and then the short player will get the $3. On the next hand, the player that is short $3 goes all in and gets Felton. He rebuys, and on the next hand, the floorman comes up with the paperwork and gives him the $3. I say, wait, shouldn't that $3 belong to that guy? And I point to the winner of the last hand who Felted him. No one else says anything, so I let it go. I study Robert's rules and like to keep abreast of house rules, and he says, according to our Robert's Rules of Poker, Section 3, General Poker Rules, missed deals, once action begins, a missed deal cannot be called, the deal will be played, and no money will be returned to any player whose hand is fouled. In irregularities, Section 3, if a card with a different color back appears during the hand, all actions void, and all chips in the pot are returned to respective bettors. If a card with a different color back is discovered in the stub, all action stands. Clearly not a missed deal since there was action, and not an irregularity since the card wasn't part of play. Correct?
Yeah, Jody says, you are technically correct. Situations like this don't occur often, so when they do, you may encounter different rulings. The important thing is the floor person does what they think is best for the game. It seems to me this is what happened. The $3 should have been given to the winner of the pot when that player was felted. It is the same as someone who has already asked for chips and paid for them, but they haven't arrived at the table yet, playing behind. Totally agree. I think that there was no reason to kill this hand. I can't see any reason to not play this. The hand played out exactly the way it was supposed to. Having a different card in the stub did not affect play at all. And it's part of those rules, too, which I know those rules aren't official. That's the thing. Yeah, but it doesn't matter. I mean, how could that have been in the best interest of the game? That card had did nothing to affect the rules. I don't get it. Or affect the play.
Well, in previous Call of the Floors, Jody's mentioned, you know, cards that don't belong there are treated like napkins. You know, they don't exist. Now, I know what people are saying. Well, if that card is in the stub, that means that a card that could have helped my hand probably wasn't in there. Or maybe it was. Maybe there's 53 cards. We never know, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, at this point, you know, the hand played out fine. And, yeah, this guy owes the other guy $3. I don't know why this had to be so complicated.
No. And the other thing, too, is he wouldn't have had to have done all that paperwork. He wouldn't have had to have gotten $3 and come back with it. I mean, it just would have been, oh, yeah, play stands. See you later. You know, yeah. I mean, that's all it would have been. It just, they make it a lot more difficult than they need to. I know Pennsylvania is pretty strict up there, so maybe they're
it's a new gaming commission up there, obviously, so they probably want to err on the side of caution. You know, I've talked to managers before, too, that sometimes they know that there's a better way of doing things, but they don't want to run the risk of the gaming commission asking them and not understanding why they decided to do something in the best interest of the game.
Right.
So it's just easier to do the more complicated version, and then you have a paper trail. And I think that might have been the situation here. I mean, it's a $22 pod, so it sounds like no one really cared. But if you said, hey, it doesn't matter, I guarantee you there are players out there that go, what do you mean a card that doesn't belong in the deck doesn't matter? That matters huge. And then you got that guy, you know, going home and telling his friends, hey, they let you play with anything at that casino. And it's just easier at this point just to, you know, end it and tell the guy. Now, I don't know what happened if this would have been like a $1,200 pot at a 1-2 game, you know.
Yes.
Something magical like that. I mean, obviously the winner's not going to be just forking over those chips pretty easily at that point. But, you know, I think the best interest, you're right. It's card didn't matter. Let's move on.
You know what? If you wanted to be really anal about it, somebody could have said, wait a minute. The pot before this is the one that's affected because that card wasn't in our deck. Blah,
yeah,
blah, blah.
How long has that card not been in the deck?
Exactly. Right. How long has that card... You know, so, I mean, you could have really made a big stink out of it, and they didn't, and they should have just said, yeah, let it go. That's right. It didn't affect the play. Put it back with the other deck. And, you know, when they say the green light was on, too, that doesn't mean anything. Those shufflers don't count cards. They just shuffle
they do.
Cards.
No, they absolutely count, yep.
Oh, okay. I thought the older 52. Versions didn't, right? The older versions didn't.
If it's not 52, it's not going to be a green light, so...
Well, that begs a question then, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, but what I don't know for sure is whether it's colorblind or not. You know, if a card from another deck is in there, you know, I don't know whether it's that I don't know. I don't think it counts colors, you know, where
right, hey, so does that mean
51 green cards and one brown card in here and it puts a red light on. I think it just counts. If it says 52 cards, then you're good to go. So it's
so does that mean that there's a card from the other deck that they're playing with is not.
That's what it sounds like to me, is that one of the cards got mixed into the other deck. So there's 52 cards in both decks, but there's a green and a brown, and a brown and a green.
Oh, man.
And it would be awesome if it's the right card.
That would be awesome.
But yeah, no, it absolutely does count. But I don't know about the colorblind thing at that point. But, you know, I think the next thing to do is, you know, obviously you take the card out, you do a countdown in front of everyone. So everybody knows everything is good. I mean, even do maybe a setup or something, and so everybody can clearly see that the right 52 cards are in the decks going forward, and then it's not a problem at that point anymore, I don't think.
Very interesting. All right, we get to complete an O'Malley's move today. We're going to refresh our memories with part one right now.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at a $1, $2, PLO 8 game. The action's been pretty standard for this type of game, pretty passive pre-flop, but then lots of betting and raising after the flop. We scooped a massive pot against 4 opponents about an hour ago, and we sit with about $800. We're up 6 big bills. The under-the-gun limps, plus 1 folds, plus 2 folds, the MP calls, MP1 calls, hijack calls, and we're in the cutoff with the Ace of Clubs, King of Hearts, King of Clubs, 7 of Diamonds. While we do have the potential to get a low, it would be a very mediocre low. However, with so many colors, there is a good chance that there are already a lot of low cards out there. We're going to raise it up here, even though we only have a one-way hand. We make it $25 to go. The button calls, the small blind folds, the big blind calls, and it's folded around. We hate being out of position. With about $80 in the pot, the flop comes down, the king of spades, queen of clubs, seven of hearts. This is a pretty decent flop for our hand. The big blind checks, and we make it $50 to go. After thinking for a while, the button tosses in a call. The big blind folds. The button is a maniac, but not in the true sense of the word. There is method to his madness. He's got a good grip on the game and obviously knows what's going on. Perhaps he only gives the appearance of being a maniac. He's up 300 and started the hand with 5. The turn is the 4 of spades. With 180 in the pot, we elect to employ some pot control. We slow down and check. Our opponent thinks only for a short while before counting out a clean 100 and puts it into the pot. Once again, we don't want to make this pot too big, but we do have the nuts right now. A raise here might get a re-raise, and we really don't want to get it all in with a hand that can only improve so much, especially with such a drawy board. We could be up against a multi-draw hand. We call. There's 380 in the pot, and the river is the jack of hearts. We once again check for pot control, and our opponent shoves for his remaining 325. Ugh. What's the play here?
Cough.
Really?
Just two hands, ace 10, 10, 9. We have one of the aces, and while it's hard to say for certain because it's Omaha, and that's a very key point that we can talk about more if we want to, I'm not sure what the card combination would have been for him to call our flop bet with ace 10. And few good players are playing a 9 and Omaha 8 anyhow. So I would have preferred to keep the heat on the turn. I think we let him get to the river for free when we shouldn't have, or at a lower price, right? Cause and we definitely might, we definitely would have known more now had we done so. But as played, to me, it just seems like our opponent is sensing weakness in us.
Fold. I thought about this, and I've been playing a lot of PLO lately, and PLO 8, not really, but I can see somebody in the mindset of having ace X, deuce X, and then jack of clubs, ten of clubs.
Sure.
And that hand right there is the ace 10 automatically built in, and the backdoor low, the backdoor nut flush. I mean, all kinds of things, the Broadway draw with wrap kind of thing. So it's certainly a hand that could have called that preflop raise. And then on the flop, they have top pair, a flush draw, backdoor Broadway, whatever. So,
but they don't have a flush draw on that.
No,
a flop.
So. Right, but I mean, there's
that's the problem. I think is backdoors. Yeah, absolutely. The hand you're talking about clearly would have been in preflop. Absolutely, that's an amazing hand.
Right.
But on the flop, are you really going to go with a gut shot? That's really all you got.
Right.
You know, that was my thing. But go on. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I'm just saying. I just felt like this guy had that. The backdoor low is what gets me. These guys will, you know, call anything if they have a chance to make their nut low and then make somebody pay for it. And so I just wondered if that was what it was.
$50.
Yeah.
To the $80 pot. You know, you're right. I mean, and that's the biggest weakness. I mean, that's what I teach in my Omaha classes all the time is you get two non-low cards on that flop. You better have something else. To continue chasing that low, because you're going to have to go perfect, and not only that perfect, but it's going to have to be perfect. It can't be, you know, an ace or a deuce or something on there.
Yeah.
And so maybe I give people too much credit for listening to me and not playing that way, but, you know, when I'm looking at a gut shot, and that's all I have on the slop, and somebody bets 50, I just have a tough time believing somebody's going to call that. But.
And I agree with you, too. I would have raised that turn. But you know that wasn't his question. His question was, "What's our play after he shows?"
Yeah, because once we get to the turn, then now you get a live low draw. Now you get the live flush draw. And you probably even have straight possibilities there if you have a 5-6 in your hand or something. So there's a lot of reasons to call that turn, but I would have made him pay for it.
Yeah.
But on the flop, I'm really struggling to see an ace 10 making that.
Okay,
there's nothing else on that flop. There's nothing else on that flop.
Yeah, the other thing, too, is like you said, we on that river, we don't have the nuts anymore. And the nut low is... Let's see, did the nut low get there? I can't remember.
No.
So somebody who was thinking about the nut low, you know, after that turn, now backs into the ace-10 or whatever. So that, I just... It seems to me like it's a nice starting hand. You had a nice flop. But as always happens with PLO, and especially PLO 8, the wrong people are sticking around, and I think we've lost here, so I'm going to fold. Okay, here comes part two.
Hello again. There are literally only two hands that beat us, the Cosenza and 10-9. So what do we do here? Can we really believe he has one of these two hands? There are a lot of ace-10s that could work here, and that's the scary thing. With his maniac image that we're starting to see through, all we can go off is his body language. He seems to be comfortable with what he's holding. He's wearing glasses and calmly shuffling his chips. His breathing seems to be even, and he's resting his chin in the palm of his hand. There just really isn't much to go off of. This is the problem with playing one-way hands in PLO 8. With a bit of extra insurance, you set yourself up for some easier decisions on later streets. Even though the only hands that beat us are Broadway and the King High Straight, I think we're going to pick a better spot. We muck. Our opponent half smiles and sighs and tells us nice fold. We can only smile back. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, in PLO 8, be careful when you flop sets. Think of them as full house draws rather than made hands. You'll save yourself a bit of money. I hope to see you on the felt.
Perhaps it's all this Kennedy assassination conspiracy coverage that's dominating the TV this month. But our opponent tells us nice fold, Chris. But did he prove it was?
The magic fold.
Exactly. But no, in all seriousness, it appears that we made the right call here, obviously. Well, not obviously. I'm still not convinced. But it doesn't change the fact that we made a poor choice on the turn, I think, that may have won us this pot. You know, if he had ace-10 and he had a low draw, then you're right. If he has the hand that you were mentioning, ace-deuce-jack, then once he's on the turn, even our raise or bet or whatever you want to do to keep the heat on is probably not going to get him to go anywhere.
Right.
But if all he had was the ace-10, which he claims to have had... then, you know, we let him get there. We need to keep the pressure on at that point. We still had the nuts on the turn. Now, I know we didn't have any backup, and that's trouble, and I get the whole pot control thing, but at that point, I think just because you don't have any redraws doesn't mean that you go into the fetal position and turtle.
No, absolutely. It kills you, though, once everything comes in on the river. And you've been hammering it to try to keep them from getting there. And then they get there, and then you have to check or whatever, or call a huge bet.
But you know, that happens in Omaha. That's just the nature of Omaha. You're going to get situations where you're going to get run down. It's so much easier to get run down in Omaha because you get so many card combinations.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you're keeping the heat on and pounding, it's not always going to get there. And now you've just taken a lot of value on the flop and the turn from people that are hoping to catch when they don't catch. So it works out. You just got to be prepared for the fact that, you know, when that stuff gets there, then yeah, now you weigh the white flag on the river. But on the turn, we were looking good. We were looking really good on the turn.
I was definitely raising that turn because you had the nuts for two streets, flop and fourth street, and you need to make them pay because you know they're drawing. They're not calling you with a set of maybe a set of queens, I don't know, but yeah.
And that's great if they are.
That's great if they are, but I mean really, that's the one hand that would call you, I think.
The only thing I'm worried about on that turn is somebody has a backdoor flush draw now. I really, again, I don't see somebody with the ace-10 calling on that flop. There's just no reason to at that point with the bet that we made. And so now maybe they got the low draw. That's the time to get the money out of them. Now, because if you got somebody, let's say he had ace-deuce, and you got them to commit to that bet on the flop, which was a great bet by you, and a terrible call for them. Now they picked up the four. Now they're like, hey, see what happened? I know what I'm doing. Now you punish them again, because I guarantee you quite a few times that low is not going to get there. And it didn't. This hand proves it out. And you would have got all that low money out of them on the turn by betting.
Well, the thing that's confusing me...
There's nothing that we would worry about on that turn.
What you're saying, though, what's confusing me is you keep bringing up Ace-10, yep. But Ace-Jack-10 is a huge wrap. So why wouldn't he have stuck around and with the backdoor draws that he does have?
Okay, well, yeah, I guess.
It's not just Ace-10. Ace-Jack-10, any one of those cards comes out, that's nine outs to make the nuts on the turn.
Okay. All right, well, that's a fair point. That's a fair point.
You know, I mean, I don't know if that's enough to
but
make
bottom
that
bottom line, I mean, that, at that point, then he needs to have that combination to make the call correct.
Right.
You're going to be able to bet enough, the proper amount to get a naked ace 10 or ace jack out of the pot, right?
Right.
It's only if they have that wrap, and if they have that wrap, they have that wrap. But right now, I mean, again, we still have the nuts.
Oh, no, I know, but you're saying you can't see ace 10 making that call, but I don't think it's ace 10. I think it's.
Okay. No, it's fair point. Fair point.
Jack
but again,
10,
that, 10 now we're stretching it to say, hey, it has to be ace 10 jack now. Which, you know, is a hand that people would play, but now we're putting people, and now that's when you're, you know, you're poking under the bed and make sure there's no monsters there.
Yeah. I don't know. I know that I've been playing a lot lately, and a lot they've been, you know, the only hand they can beat me with is this hand, so I call, and they have that hand. And it's right. Like, what? So
well,
it just seems to be out all the time.
Yeah, so I'm not dismissing that, but I mean, I guess what I'm saying is on that turn, it doesn't matter. That on the turn, you have the nuts right
oh,
now.
Oh, sure.
And for people to get to that point for the bet that you put out, it'd be different if we just checked the flop or check called the flop or something ridiculous like that. We didn't.
Yeah.
We bet out more than half the pot, and this guy called. So what does he have at that point? I'm looking at this board, and I can't see it. The wrap combination you're bringing up, sure, I get that. Other than that, I think we got him crushed at this point. And let's keep crushing him on the turn, and then, you know, if something comes in...
Yeah.
You know, if a low spade came on that river, then boom, you know, hey,
yep.
Life sucks.
Yep.
It happens.
Yep.
But that didn't happen.
I agree. I definitely put more money on that turn, man. I put money in on the turn and just, you know, hope that the variance is on our side for that one card to come.
Yeah, I will say it's tough being out of position in Omaha because I get what he's saying. You don't want to build this pot, but you got to do something there. You got to put something in. That's just the nature of it. And, you know, we let him get there.
Yeah.
This is Doyle Brunson, and you're listening to Annie Up.
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at AntieUpMagazine.com. This week's sponsor is Smapsoft, creator of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products. Download the app today by visiting the iTunes store. And this comes from Don, who I believe just moved to our area.
Oh.
I think you're going to like this, Chris. It is Roll Your Own Starter... Super stud.
What? All right, so it's basically roll your own.
So, of course, this is playing a home game, so don't get excited about trying to find this in a casino anywhere.
All
but
right.
Here's how it works. So you get dealt five cards down. You toss two of them. You choose your own up card. And then it plays out like regular stud the rest of the time.
Okay, so
it's kind of like a cross of crazy pineapple and stud.
Yeah, and five card draw, I guess. All right, so you get five cards, you pick your best three, you throw two away, and you choose one of the three to put up to show everybody to try to trick them.
There's a lot of stuff going on here.
Wow. All right.
That's a lot of strategy, actually.
Wow. Okay.
And, he says the stakes are $1 ante with a 2-hour bring-in, and then 5-10 the rest of the way.
Wow.
So playing five-handed.
That's a big-ass pot that you can make in a stud game.
Because you know these people can't fold this stuff, right?
Yeah, oh, no way.
You're going to play something almost every time, right? It's just a matter of what you throw away, what you show.
And you know these types of home games that are playing these anyway, they're probably like, hey, you could buy another card for $20 if you want. You
know,
they'll add in all these weird rules and stuff, so. Wow. Okay. All right. So, okay, I've got the premise here. I'm ready to go. What's going on?
He is dealt ace of diamonds, ten of spades, deuce of clubs, deuce of hearts, deuce of diamonds.
Okay, we're rolled up, baby.
Oh, maybe we don't have to be.
That's true. No, we could throw away one of the deuces or two of the deuces and try to make a Broadway or a wheel. But I think we're gonna go with the three of a kind.
Yes, absolutely. So the next question is, oh my gosh, what card are we gonna turn up?
Yeah, you know, the thing is, obviously, it's going to be a deuce, but, you know, you have to try to sell it as a flush draw, I think. Or they're going to think maybe you have aces underneath, you know, and that's why you're showing a deuce. Because why would you show a deuce, you know, to be so dis- – why would you keep a deuce, too? That's the other thing.
Yeah.
You know, because any other card is better than a deuce. So you would have to – you're giving away that you're either going for a flush draw or that you – you have a pair of deuces and an ace kicker or something. So it's sort of, you'd like to think it's deceptive, but it's probably not, except the fact that you're rolled up. No one's going to put you on rolled up at that point.
Yeah, our hero says, even though starting rolled up in stud is a dream, in SS, as he calls it, it only means that you have to beat every possible draw you can imagine. Due to the extra options players get, hands start to play more like Omaha than stud until 5th Street. And so he does toss the ace of diamonds, ten of spades, of course, and he turns up the deuce of clubs, ensuring that he has to bring in. And I think this is what's most interesting about this hand, is in addition to the whole, you know, why is he playing a deuce? By playing it and turning a deuce up, you know, particularly the deuce of clubs,
yeah.
You know you're going to get the bring in, so who would do that?
Yeah.
You know, I think in this case, I mean, not that it makes a ton of difference, but I would have flipped up one of the other deuces just, you know, and Hollywooded it a little bit. Oh, I was hoping somebody had the deuce of clubs.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't have done the hearts because they're, you know, there's a chance that someone's going to be like, why would he turn the hearts over? But,
yeah.
You know, or I would have done the diamonds because that way you know you have the deuce of clubs. You know you're going to be the bring-in anyway. But this way it looks like you're trying to at least, you know, avoid the club or something. I don't know, but yeah, it's kind of weird that he chose the club to force himself to say that he had the lowest
card. I mean, obviously no one else knows you have other deuces, so they're not thinking that you made a choice there, but we know we have the deuces, right. So why not make a choice that's a little less obvious, right?
Yeah.
Again, subtle part of this hand. I'm sure the hand has nothing to do with this.
All poker is subtle.
But yeah, you're right, you know, when you have this option, I mean, the only thing that could be sensed as a weaker hand is three clubs at this point, right?
Yeah. And also, too, one other thing is, no matter what deuce he chose, it didn't matter, because if the deuce of spades got turned over, he still would have been the bring-in, so it really didn't matter, so he should have just shown the highest one he had.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
But, no, you're right. I mean, when you're showing a deuce of clubs, that means you're trying to be deceptive. They know something is up, because you couldn't have had a worse card. So, and they say, what did he throw away if he's showing a deuce of clubs? So, they have to know something is going on here. It's not like you have three crappy cards, and you know you could have picked any card you wanted to put up. So something's fishy with these. They should know that going forward.
It also depends on the player. I mean, if you got, I can see our home game. Some of us thinking somebody is just being funny by doing that too. So,
yeah.
But
I don't want to pay $2 for a laugh, though. I'll tell you that.
You wouldn't. Everybody else would. all right. So he says, being at a table that's three aggressive players and two rocks, and our hero throws himself into the aggressive pool. I complete the five and wait to get raised. So even bolder now are you showing the deuce of clubs, but you're going to complete.
Hmm.
In fact, actually, in a weird way, that kind of mitigates the fact that you showed the deuce of clubs. If you're saying, hey, my hand's so strong, I'm going to complete. I knew I was going to get the bring in, so I wanted to control the complete right away.
That's really weird. You know, there are times in stud eight when you complete because, you know, you go low with your hand, and so it makes sense. But in this one, and you also don't want to slow play stud eight hands. Now, I know he's saying that this game turns out to be almost like Omaha, and, you know, you have all these extra options and everything, but I don't think I would have... I think I would have come along like it was a flush draw and hope I got bricks that showed that I didn't have a flush. You know what I mean? And then, boom, there's my three of a kind or my boat or my quads or whatever. So I don't think I would have completed it. To me, I think that's a mistake. I think it's a mistake.
Well, I think... like I said, I think it kind of mitigates the fact that you're putting the deuce out there. You're just saying, you know, hey, I know I'm going to bring in. I want to control the complete right now. And again, it's subtle. I don't think that's a bad move, I guess.
I do. The fact that it's, one, it's already fishy.
Because what's going to happen if you don't? That you're going to, when it comes back to you, you're going to raise, and then it's going to seem even fishier at that point. Oh, baby, all right.
No, I'm not going to raise.
I'm totally not.
I'm going to wait till 5th Street. I'm totally going to slow play my trips in regular stud. If I'm playing regular stud, if it's stud 8, I'm getting as much money in as I can because they're going to suck out on me for the low. But if it's regular stud and I'm rolled up, they only got five. How many times do we play five-card draw and somebody's got three of a kind? How often does that happen? Almost never. And so now, and then you get to see the rest of their cards. So you can at least put the puzzle together that they might have tripped up on you on 4th or 5th Street. But if it doesn't look like that, and it looks like you're missing your flush draw bricks on 5th Street when someone's betting or whatever, that's when I would raise a bet doubles. And I definitely would slow play this. I would not be aggressive at all. Because like I said, it's already fishy that the two of clubs is shown. It's fishy. And then you're raising or whatever, completing. I just couldn't do it. I would want to get as much money.
But you don't think if you auto complete here like you did that it makes it seem like less than a set?
Well, you might get some of that.
It's going to be, it's going to be, obviously, I would think at that point people are going to go, all right, well, he doesn't have a set because why would he complete a set here? So it's got to be aces, kings, something like that underneath, which, doesn't really help you too much, but it at least disguises the set a little bit, doesn't it?
Well, maybe, but I'm also worried that now you've showed this aggression with this fishy startup card, and so people are going to fold. And why do I want people to fold for the minimum when I can keep them in a little bit longer and then get them out on 5th Street? I feel like I'm losing money.
Are people really going to fold in this game, do you think? I mean, we've never played it, obviously. We're just coming
out. For $5? There's two rocks. That's 40% of your entire field. You're one of the players. So literally, you only have two players that might stick around for that. The other guys are rocks. Yeah, they're going to fold for a complete. They're going to know something is up. I don't know. I just think that this is stud, not stud 8, and I would be a little less aggressive right now.
Okay. All right, so the cards are turned up. Four of spades folds. The queen of diamonds calls. The ace of hearts raises. The six of clubs folds. And it's back to us.
Well, I think you're going to know my play the rest of the way. I'm just going to call. I'm not going to make it worse. And the other thing, too, is now because you completed and this ace raised, if it had been you had just called and the queen just called and then the guy made it five, that next person might have just called five, but now he can't call 10. So I mean, you literally now it's a domino effect. You've actually maybe kept someone else from calling and more money in the pot. So that's why I don't like to complete.
Yeah, but I think as he says, this plays more like Omaha. So I'm not as excited about my set to begin with in this game as I am in regular stud. I think we got to protect. So I'm fine having one guy in this hand that's raising me right now, and I will beat the stuffing out of him in this hand. And the great thing about this now is that we have a deuce showing. We got two underneath. This guy has an ace showing. He's probably going to be out of position for the rest of this hand, or at least for the next couple of streets at least, right?
Yeah, the ace will be betting first the rest of the way. At least.
So I mean, if we want to slow down at that point and just have him bet call, bet call, we can do that until it gets to the point that we feel like coming alive a little bit. So I think we've got an extra advantage with that too.
Okay,
I'm fine playing this heads up.
Oh, I am kind of fine playing it heads up. It's just it seems to me once he catches on, it's going to be a check call the rest of the way. You know what I mean? I'm fine with it heads up too. I would like to keep people in. The average winning stud hand is not better than three of a kind.
Right.
I don't care how many cards you get to do it. I mean, you're only getting two extra cards in the beginning. It's not like it's 20 cards each. So, I don't know. I'm still of the mindset of slow playing this. So, I'd like to keep people in for at least one more street.
Well, at this point, since the guy raised, I don't think I want to re-raise now here. I'll call and see if we can get the other guy to stick around that's already put five in. At least we're three-handed at that point, and then we can play it out a little bit.
Yeah, that's my thinking. Is I'm doing everything I can to be unaggressive, not aggressive, not calling, just calling. I'm not re-raising at all. That would just if you re-raised, you're dead. They all know what you have.
Yeah. All right. Well, here it does re-raise to 15.
Oof.
The Queen of Diamonds calls.
Oof.
And the Ace of Hearts raises to cap it. And he says, "Actually, back to me seriously. Not a decision here to call, obviously." Well, I shouldn't say obviously. I mean, at this point, he's capped it. I mean, you could be up against a set of aces.
Yeah.
That would be tragic. But it's not worth folding here. I mean, I don't know whether I would raise here again if I had the opportunity, which we don't.
But. Yeah, no. He said, did he say it was a cap?
Yeah, he said the aces raise was a cap.
Okay. So even if you are up against a set of aces, I wouldn't fold. You can always hit quads. You can also boat up. This guy... how many times have you been rolled up and you don't boat up? Happens all the time. So
yeah.
I'm not going anywhere for all that money. Now there's so much money in there, I would just, either check call if I'm behind or...
Well, that's going to be my question. If, let's say we don't improve, right away. I mean, how much money are we putting in this pot?
I'm just going to call the rest of the way.
I mean, call the way down.
If he's capped it and you got another guy in there who's sticking around, there's 60 in the pot already to call.
True.
You know, five on one street.
All right, but what if that other guy wakes up with something and then they get into a raising war here? At that point, probably going to have to bail out of this hand, aren't you?
Well, on 4th Street, it'll be a max $20, and there's 60 in the middle already, and then...
Yeah, 4th would be too early for me to bail.
Yeah, so I... But yeah,
but once it gets to 5th, maybe, and I haven't...
I have to see the board. I can't make that question now.
But right, it looks I know. Like I mean, what are you putting on it? Are you thinking he's just split aces right now?
Yeah, I mean, right now...
And if he's split aces, why would he split his aces like that?
Yeah.
I mean, this is an interesting thing, because I've never played stud where you get to roll your own here.
Right.
And I'm sure there is some strategy in splitting your aces. I would think it'd be more beneficial not to split your aces, right?
Right.
But, you know, if you're putting an ace up, then you're probably forced to put the ace up, right?
Well, here's the deal. It could be that he just got a heart draw, too.
Oh, it could be also
But the fact that he's capping it makes it rare that it's a heart draw.
Right. I guess the deceptive would come in if maybe I had kings or queens or some kind of pair.
Yeah.
I'd rather not split them. I'd put the ace up, and then I can represent the ace.
Yeah.
But again, I don't know if anybody would really believe you. This is a great game. We might have to play this in the home game.
Oh, jeez. No, I think the rule was if you can't win a bracelet in our home game calling, then you can't play it. So
We put double flop every time.
Yeah, but it's hold'em. Yeah, that's true.
Well, right. It's a stud.
Yeah, but no, it's not. It's five card draw Omaha stud. That's not
stud
right.
Stud pineapple. It's the same thing.
Okay, well, I'm going to think he probably has. You know what? I don't think he's rolled up. There's no way, because why would he be so aggressive with the absolute nut hand? There's no reason to be this aggressive with it. So I'm going to say it's either ace, ace, king,
well, no,
or three
there's
hearts.
A reason to say that, hey, if I raise here, am I really stupid enough to be raising with rolled up? Of course I'm not. I just got a pair of aces. Come along. And then when I get re-raised, awesome. At that point, who cares now at this point? All right, I give him an opportunity to not believe me, and they believe me, so all right, let's rock and roll.
I'm going
to
go with law of averages, too, though, and yeah. Say he doesn't have three aces. But that's just me speculating on the millions of stud hands that I've played in my life. So I'm going to soul play, and I'm going to think he probably has split aces right now. But if he goes crazy when another heart drops, then I'll know he's on a draw, and I got him crushed right now.
All right, so we call. We go to 4th Street with 75 units of the pot, and our hero says, "This is where I fall in love with my hand, Chris." We get the deuce of spades.
Oh, man.
The queen of diamonds gets the jack of hearts, and the ace of hearts gets the five of hearts. And, of course, now what I just said wouldn't happen, and we're the first to act. So what do we do now?
Okay, so we can bet 10, right? Because that's...
Yep,
oh, it's stud. It's not stud
yep.
8. You could bet 10 on a pair of showings. I'm going to check. I don't want to lose anybody. I have quads. I'm only going to lose to a straight flush and bigger quads. And it's not going to happen. Why would I want to scare anybody out here? If I bet 10...
But you think checking is not going to scare? I mean, again, this is what changes about stud here from stud is that we had cards. We threw them away. We choose our roll your own. At this point, I think the jig's up. I'm not saying anybody's going to believe we have quads here, but they got to assume that we had two pair here, right?
Yeah.
Unless they thought we were on a flush draw, but I think the checking is just... I don't think anybody's going to buy that. And the action's been pretty hard as it is anyhow, so there's a good chance that betting out's probably going to get raised anyhow, so...
Yeah, if it
and the
do,
queen
do,
is
do.
Next to act after us too, so hopefully he'll come along before the ace gets crazy. I don't see much. I don't see much reason to check it myself.
Right,
you
I
can
do.
Check if you want.
I do. I think that if somebody is betting a flush draw here, and that's why they showed a deuce of clubs to give it a, you know, to misguide them to think that you know he's putting a deuce out because it's a pair in the hole. But to me, if I had three clubs, I might put the deuce of clubs out. And now I've missed one of my clubs already. I'm not going to bet a 4th street without my 4th club. So I would check it, being disappointed that I only have a pair of deuces now. Hope that ace bets when it gets to him. And then he bets 10, and then I bet 20. You know, or maybe I just call again and hope that the queen sticks around. Queen, what did he get? Queen?
I got a jack of hearts.
Queen jack. So yeah, I would. I do. I still find it plenty of reasons to check here. Okay. I really do. I don't think the jig is up at all. It could have been three clubs. It could have been kings in the hole, and I wasn't believing his ace. Could have been all kinds.
Yeah, but now we got two pair. That's the thing. The only hand where we don't have at least two pair here is the flush draw.
No, I know, but you can still be afraid of aces up. You know, you could be saying, hey, this guy's real aggressive.
Like, I can't have aces up right now unless he had a five in the hole. So
yeah, you could have had aces and fives. Why?
Oh,
we,
gosh. Jeez. What happened to my business partner?
Split aces with a five in the hole? Who knows? I have no idea. You could have ace five, 3-4 as a dealing hand, starting hand. Then he threw away the 3-4.
I'm pretty sure you have Ted and Mark Wahlberg crawling to bed with you when it thunders now. My gosh. When did you become such a scaredy cat?
I'm not scared, Scott. Oh, I'm bringing God. These guys along. No one bets with quads. There's no reason to.
Right. So that's now it's misdirection. This guy can't really be betting out with quads now, can he?
You're not going to get anybody to raise. If the jig is up and they think you have two pair and they don't have two pair, they're not going to raise you.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah. You have two pair. I don't. Let's raise you. Because I have an ace showing and I might make
not right
races
now, up. But it's 4th Street. We got a lot of plate left in this hand.
That's why I check. I wanted to bet to double again on 5th Street. Well, not double again because it's already double because of the pair, but I can check.
All right. Well, you go ahead and do that.
I am. I'm checking.
I'll get you a little bomb to put on your belly there, band-aids in case you get a boo-boo.
All right. Let's check.
All right, so our hero says, since the action has already been fast, why slow down? I say I agree with you.
I disagree.
I press 10 units out there because it's a paired up board, and we can do the big bet. The queen jack calls. The ace five raises.
So are you thinking now
you
raise
like
again? You're thinking you're going to raise again, right?
Well, at this point, these guys are believing everything. Why not? Why not?
Okay. All right.
I mean, you're talking about trying to get value. Let's get value right now.
Oh, man. Okay. All right. Well, I'm
the only worry called about raising now is I think there's still one more bet. So maybe we lose the queen guy in between if we raise here because he's worried that the other guy's got a cap. So he's going to know he's going to have to put 20 more in this pot. And he's got to wonder what he has that we don't have, unless he's rolled up too, which would be beautiful.
Well, here's the question. Okay. At the beginning of the hand, he said he had three aggressive players and two rocks. So that means that either all three of these guys are aggressive or
aggressive
at least
players.
One of them's a rock. I would like to know which one of these guys is a rock that can't see a cap street with an ace showing and then a bet out with a deuce of clubs showing and then a bet out with two deuces showing to come along. So if he's aggressive, why is he just calling? And if he's a rock, how could he not recognize that an ace capped it and deuces are betting out and capping it? So to me, someone's not a rock here, and someone's not aggressive here, and at least the plus two guy isn't to me. I don't know. But I'm just calling. I think that, like you said, I can lose 10 bucks here. If I raise, the ace would come along. But then I don't get that queen on the future streets. You know, I might get more money out of him on the future streets if he makes, like, a Broadway, you know, or something, and he can't fold. You know, he might afford a Broadway right now. Who knows?
Yeah, here's the only problem with not raising here, I think, is that we have to hope that one of these other guys pairs up on the next street and takes the lead on the action. If not, then what are you going to do? If you just called here, you're not going to bet out again on 5th Street, so you got the check. And I would think at some point these guys are going to say, you know what, maybe I need to get a free card here and catch up to this guy.
Well,
so I think at this point you're forced into raising here because I'm not going to want to not bet out on 5th Street now after I started this mess.
Yeah, the deuce hurts, actually, as far as the betting.
Oh, it hurts terrible.
Yeah, because I wanted to spring alive on 5th Street. That's when I wanted to come awake, and now...
Yeah, exactly. So it's a change, you know.
Yeah.
We blew a tire. We can't get there. Now maybe we go wine tasting for the day, you know. We change plans.
Yeah, I'm hoping that I get a club on the 5th Street, but... No. Anyway, I'm still going to be as passive as possible, I think, until that queen makes up his mind if he's going to stick around or fold. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if I lose a bet on this by checking. I don't know.
All right. Well, our hero says this screams that our queen-jack player has at least queen-queen, possibly a hidden king-king. Either way, they're crushed. And the other opponent with the ace-five has split aces or the big heart draw. I need him to catch up or at least catch and hope that he doesn't hit perfect on me. I'm really dismissing the flush draw in that scenario. And our hero says, I decided a raise. Looks like I'm being stubborn, so I do just that. The Queen Jack calls, and he says, I'm a little surprised that the Ace-5 just calls behind as well.
Okay, so, I mean, obviously we know we're ahead, but I think the hands are starting to, like you said, like he said, are starting to come into focus.
I'm loving this at this point, because now I think... Now by raising, now we can bet out with impunity and keep the action on it. These folks think that they can still catch up to us, which is what we want, and maybe one of them or two of them still can if they get, you know, if everybody's rolled up here. But now I can bet out and not worry about it. I mean, otherwise it would've been weird.
Yeah.
And since they think they can catch up to us, they're probably going to call at least one more bet here, right?
Yeah. Now that queen has come along, it's hard to imagine that he would just have a split queens, but he might. It's just weird because, you know, what is he thinking he can beat at this point? Is he just going to make queens up in a hand that, I don't know. It's weird. If that queen had folded at all at any point, then I would have been playing this completely differently. But I don't know. I do like the passive thing, but, you know, and then spring into action later, but it seems like now I have no choice but to just keep betting.
Yeah, I mean, we're just going to... I think you're just going to put the foot on the gas and see how much money you can get out of this hand.
Yeah, and then hope they get somewhere and then raise you.
Yeah.
You know, but...
And hope they don't pair their up cards, just in case.
Yeah.
All right, so we go to Fifth Street. We get the King of Spades. So we have Deuce of Clubs, Deuce of Spades, King of Spades showing. To Queen Jack, it's the Ten of Diamonds. So they have Queen of Diamonds, Jack of Hearts, Ten of Diamonds. And the Ace 5 gets the Tray of Clubs. So they have Ace of Hearts, Five of Hearts, Tray of Clubs.
Hmm. He's made his wheel, and the other guy made his Broadway. Yay! okay, well, he might as well just bet out now. I mean, checking isn't going to... People are going to be like, why are you checking when we all have bricked? So, I mean, I guess the queen didn't necessarily brick. Could have had Ace, King of Diamonds in the hole and made his Broadway. But, yeah, I'd bet out.
All right, so our hero says nothing but good news here. The Queen Jack 10 could have just hit a straight, so that's good. The Ace 5 Trey just completed a low, but we're not playing SS8, so low is not an issue. And also the Queen Jack 10 just grabbed a royal card from the other guy, so we pretty much just locked this up. I'll lead out for 10 units and get both callers. Looks like everybody's starting to slow down. And he says the Queen Jack 10 guy must not be made yet. And I think this is what I thought was going to happen to this point. Now, you know, now it's dawning on them that they're probably way behind here, but they're stubborn enough to believe that they can still catch up. And that's great. We'll still get 10 bucks out of them until they finally fall off the immunity idol post in the middle of the water.
Yeah. No, I. Yep, they're just going to keep betting and then hope somebody makes something that they think is great and they raise you and then you can get some more money in. It's actually so weird that, you know, you make quads and you're kind of disappointed. I mean, not disappointed because you're probably going to need it the way this
goes. As long as they keep calling, I'm not disappointed.
No, I know, but I mean, you might, early on, you were getting caps and stuff. Now it's just calls. Yeah, so
right. Well, you can expect that's going to happen at some point.
The other thing, too, is he said that he got a royal card before on 5th, but he actually got the royal on 4th Street because the 10 of Diamonds isn't a royal card. It was the Jack of Hearts, but just wanted to remind you that. But anyway, it's just going to be pretty standard now. Just bet out and then hope somebody makes a hand that wants to raise you with it.
Our pot's 285, and we pick up the 6 of Diamonds. So we have the Deuce of Clubs, Deuce of Spades, King of Spades, 6 of Diamonds showing. The Queen Jack 10 gets the 8 of Spades. So the Queen of Diamonds, Jack of Hearts, 10 of Diamonds, 8 of Spades. And the Ace 5 Trey gets the 7 of Hearts. So it's Ace of Hearts, 5 of Hearts, Trey Club, 7 of Hearts. As our hero says, the Queen Jack 10 could have just completed a straight, and the other opponent could have finally hit his flush. So at this point, I'm kind of doubting that either one of those is what's going on here. But I'm going to guess we're not going to slow down, right? Keep betting?
No, we're going to bet. I mean... A savvy player might say this guy might have a boat. I should just check call with my flush the rest of the way because the pot's big enough. But the way these guys are playing, and this, I know that this plus 3 is the aggressive guy. I mean, I'm not doubting.
Yeah, I mean, I could almost make a case here for checking and bemoaning and doing our Hollywood that we think the flush got there and caught up, and we wanted to exercise some pot control here and let him bet because we know maybe the plus two comes along and bets. That's the only weird thing. We're kind of in a weird position here, because if we just check, hoping to check raise, then at that point the jig is definitely up, right?
Yeah.
And we're not going to get the queen to come along. So
you have to bet.
We're going
to
make more money by betting, I think.
Yeah, because if you bet, he calls.
And maybe you get him to raise, too. Yeah.
So if you bet and it's a call and then you might get a raise, then you can make up your mind there whether or not a call will keep the second guy in.
Right.
Or if a raise will, you know, by then you're not really losing a bet because the guy's probably not going to call the river when you bet out again. So
exactly.
Yeah, I think I'm definitely betting and hoping to get that extra 10 out of the guy in the middle and then take it from there.
All right, so we bet out of the queen jack 10-8 calls, and like we scripted it, the ace 5 tray 7 raises.
Yes.
Yep, he hit his flush. Good news.
Okay, well, let's raise because we only have, what, one street left, so let's raise now.
All right, and that's what we do, and the queen jack player tanks for a few minutes here, looks at both myself and the other player and says, it's going up anyway, and caps it at 40 units.
No way. What could he have? A straight big deal.
I totally need to be in this game.
Man.
Well, of course, both of us call, and pot's 405 going into 7th Street. And not that it matters, but we get the 5 of clubs, and we lead out for 10. The queen jack gives what he describes as a crying call, and the next player, the ace 5 player, raises, and he says only because he had a brain cramp. If he really thinks he's good here, then I'll be renting him out to home games all over Florida for a small percentage of your tank. So, of course, we pop it again. The other player mutters about how he knows the other guy is bluffing, but calls before the other player finally realizes the sky is blue, the grass is green, water is wet, and he's beat, and offers up a call to save face.
Wow.
What a terrible river play for everyone. We show our quads. The queen jack guy shows a straight and complains about not playing hold'em this round. And, of course, our other player shows his flush and just shakes his head.
Wow. All right, so it was a flush, so it wasn't the aces. You dismissed a flush, right? That wasn't easy to see.
Yeah, to be honest, this is what's really a problem. We talked about this on the show before, too, is you can't play poker assuming everybody's playing at your level.
Yeah.
You got to stop and think. Sometimes people are idiots. And so he shows us what they started with. And the guy at the flush draw did start with 3 hearts. Got his 4th heart on 4th street. And then river got it on, completed his flush, obviously, at 6th. That seems like a lot of action with ace of hearts, king of hearts, 8 of hearts.
Yeah, he capped it, right? Before 4th street? Wow.
The other guy started with split queens. He had queens and he had a 9 underneath. And obviously picked up the straight draw and then got the straight.
How does he know that? I mean, how does he know what the hole cards were?
Well, it's a home game, I'm sure.
He asked them, you think?
Probably asked or something, yeah. But I don't know. I'm believing our guy, you know? Gosh.
I'm going to put this on hand of the week for the Antioch Poker Cast. You guys need to tell me your hole cards and how you played this hand from beginning to end. I'm strictly not going to use that for my own knowledge later. I just want to put it on the show. Wow, that's a sick game. You are not allowed to call this in the home game.
Oh, man.
I don't care if it's your
I would if these guys come.
Hey, Don, thanks for that hand. Roll your own. Wow, haven't heard that in a long time. All right, good show. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.